Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, October 12, 2017. Many topics to cover tonight. I'll be talking a bit about dwarf planets with rings that was in the news this week. And that's one of the scientific topics. Then I'll be talking about a myriad of side topics dealing with hurricanes, a number of issues, the California wildfires, and other topics. First of all, interestingly enough, the Canary Islands, which are off the coast of Africa, the western coast, very interesting geological circumstances there. Now, historically, the coal fields of Pennsylvania, now one would wonder, what are the coal fields of Pennsylvania have to do with the Canary Islands? Well, actually, they very much are related. The issue is that we have seen tsunamis in recent time. The tsunami that hit India also hit the island of Madagascar on the east coast of Africa, the massive island of Madagascar. And when the tsunami a number of years ago that began in Jakarta, the Sunda region of Jakarta, and basically wiped out the entire southeastern coast of India. Remember, the tsunami came and it was without warning. I mean, the people had absolutely no warning. And the tsunamis went inland a number of miles in certain places. That's how far inland it went. But in the case of the tsunamis that created the coal fields of Pennsylvania, the tsunamis which caused this went, you know, Pennsylvania is very far inland in the coal fields. So let me just explain a little bit about how this happens. I'm putting a map on my webpage showing the coal fields. You can also pull these up on the internet. But basically what happened is the coal is not really what you read about in the textbooks. What you are taught is that coal forms from decaying fern forests. The concept there being that the fern forests grow, the decaying carbon-rich matter falls down and forms deposits and therefore turns into coal beds. Well, it's really totally incorrect. If you pick up a piece of coal, it's layered plant material and it's not decayed. I have examples of this. I've shown them before. If I have access to these again in the next couple days, I'll try and post a picture. But basically, it's as if you took plant material, a lot of plant material, and just smashed it all together. And then through the time, because there's no oxygen, there's no air in there, the water is compressed out of there. And basically, you're left with the carbon material that's in the plant. And it's dried. And basically, that's coal. There's dirty coal and there's clean coal. I've talked about this before in my show, where the dirty coal has oil and hydrocarbons primarily and other chemicals. So when it burns, these chemicals come out in the gaseous form, and that's why we call it dirty coal. The clean coal is coal that's just the remaining plant matter. So how does some coal become clean coal and some coal become dirty coal? Well, it turns out that the dirty coal is impregnated with the oil, the hydrocarbons, etc., and the tsunamis that create the coal beds, because the tsunami comes in, it sweeps up the plant material, because it's like a bulldozer coming in offshore, sweeps up all this plant material and dumps it into deposits. And in Pennsylvania, the coal deposits are in layers. So this has happened And then you have a layer of coal, a layer of gravel, a layer of coal, gravel, etc. And so this has happened repeatedly on a massive scale. And one person pointed out the other day that, remember that the ocean levels used to be much lower than what they are now. So the tsunamis that created the coal beds that are way in by Pennsylvania occurred with a coastline that was much farther out than the ocean ports that we see today at the Atlantic Ocean. The coast was actually farther out on the continental shelf, which is now underwater. So back to the Canary Islands. This past week, there was a swarm of small earthquakes, but small earthquakes are not good because that means that the plates are starting to shift in that area. And so here's the problem, that the underground, it's called sloughing. In other words, a massive piece of land or basically earth slides down and displaces water, so that just that sloughing motion creates a tsunami. These tsunamis can cross the Atlantic Ocean in a matter of 6 to 8 hours, depending on where you are. If you're in New York, it's probably 6 hours. If you're in Miami, it's probably more like 8 hours. But still, it's almost zero warning, and the wall of water could come in, a very high wall of water. And we know from the historical record that these have gotten in as far as Pennsylvania. So that's why I'm putting a map, just to show you how far inland these tsunamis can go. Now, the standard story for how coal beds form does not include tsunamis, interestingly enough. But we saw this actually occur, and that's why I started talking about the tsunami in India. We actually saw this in Madagascar as that major tsunami came in from the Indian Ocean, basically, and came in all the way across the Indian Ocean to Madagascar and piled up massive amounts of vegetation, trees, grass, brush, every form of vegetation, piled it up inland up against a mountainside. So we see these coal bed deposits forming by tsunamis. So this is a recorded fact. This is a reality. This is literally something that is occurring in science in planet Earth, but the standard science explanation is once again lacking any real truth to it. So the bottom line is we have a problem on planet Earth in that there's potential for massive tsunamis to reach the east coast of the United States in very short time frames. That's a problem because about one-third of the U.S. population lives along that eastern seaboard from Maine through New York, Pennsylvania, south, New Jersey, of course, and down the eastern seaboard, Connecticut, Massachusetts, all the way down to Miami, the Carolinas, North Carolina, South Carolina, the Georgia, Virginia, etc. So all of those states down to Florida have the potential to basically have their coastlines wiped clean by a tsunami. Now, if you live in these regions, once again, I don't like to be an alarmist, but I would suggest you keep your gas tank full, keep your ears to the rail, and if you hear of such activity, then simply get in your car, get your family, and go travel west, and just get away from the coastline. There is no emergency planning going on in the government. This is like an unknown issue in terms of geology, because remember, they think that the coal fields form from fern forests that just grew and the leaves fell and solidified into coal one day. But if you look at leaves that fall, they become basically decayed matter, and that's not what we see in the coal beds. The same type of thing happens in, for example, many countries have bogs where the plant material falls down, there's no oxygen, and therefore it solidifies into what is known as peat. As peat is kind of a non-compressed form of coal. The issue with coal is it's been compressed, all the water has been forced out of it, but in places like Ireland, they'll burn peat for fire, for heat, dry it out, and that's a source of heat combustible for fire and heating houses. It's not the cleanest burning carbonate material on the planet, but it's still used extensively in some places in the world. The only thing I can leave you with here is that this is a potential problem. The real issue, however, is, are these earthquakes man-made? They're very unusual, just like, for example, I'll be talking about the speed of Hurricane Nate that came into New Orleans, moving at a record 26 miles an hour, twice the speed of a normal hurricane. So what exactly was going on there? Although Nate, in terms of overall damage, was not as damaging as the other hurricanes, the Harvey that hit Houston or Irma that hit the Caribbean, or Maria, which did a tremendous amount of damage in the Caribbean islands, Puerto Rico, etc. But the issue, when I was doing radio shows a number of weeks ago, I talked about the tsunamis as a potential where someone who wanted to do damage to the United States could cause underground earthquakes in the Canary Islands and literally wipe out the eastern coast of the United States. Is that possible? Well, the same people have the technology to do this as they're the same people that manipulate hurricanes. Back in the early 1900s, Tesla already was aware of vibrational modes that could be used for generating earthquakes. And he had developed some earthquake generators. Basically, what happens, there's a couple ways to do this. Of course, the modern way is to use planted charges, small nuclear charges, and then create the landslides in that manner. But the old-fashioned Tesla mechanism was to use resonance frequencies. In other words, you take a physical system, any object, pretty much any object has a resonance frequency. And whether it's a piece of wood, a piece of crystalline material, or whether it's a piece of metal, what happens is that the material sets up vibrational patterns, and if you hit the resonance frequency and keep pumping energy into the piece of material at the resonant frequency, it starts to add up. And that's basically the same principle as a laser or maser. But here's how it works. Let me use some examples. If you take a square piece of thin sheet metal, and I've seen videos. There's really wonderful videos on the internet about this. You can go to YouTube and see some physical reality with resonant frequencies. But basically, take a sheet of metal, thin sheet metal, connect a speaker, and that speaker then is connected to a frequency oscillator. So what the frequency oscillator is doing is driving the speaker at a set frequency. As you change the frequency, as you go from low frequency to higher frequencies, and this is the other thing they do, they put the sheet metal horizontal and they sprinkle it. What I saw was salt, just regular table salt, but you could use gravel or sand likewise, but just fine-grained material. And what happens is as you increase the frequency, there are resonant patterns that occur in the piece of metal. And so what happens is you see patterns that develop where the plate basically develops frequency in patterns on the piece of metal. So as you increase, the patterns get more complicated, etc. And very interesting to watch. I'm sure you can find those on the internet. Just search for resonant frequency oscillators, etc., and you'll find all kinds of examples. It's like when the opera singer sings a high E or whatever, the crystalline glass has a resonant frequency, and if you hit that note, you can break a piece of glass on a table across the room. So the same is true of the Earth. Physical properties in the Earth have resonant frequencies, and all you have to do is find that resonant frequency, and you can cause things like earthquakes. You can cause large buildings to self-destruct, so to speak, although this is not related to what we saw at 9/11. Those were charges. That was the other modern way of doing things, is, you know, blowing something up with charges, with explosives. But the resonant frequency, what happens is that when things continue to vibrate, they tend to tear themselves apart. These resonant frequencies keep building up and building up to the point where it overcomes the physical properties of the medium, of the material, and self-destructs, basically. So, at any rate, is there manipulation going on in the Canary Islands? The geologists that reported on this said that the swarm of earthquakes in the Canary Islands, around 40 of them in succession, maximum 2.7 on the Richter scale, they said it was very unusual for that area. And so, could somebody be doing this, or is this naturally occurring? That's very difficult to say, but the end result could be the same, whether it's man-made or artificially constructed. The end result could be a devastating tsunami wave hitting the east coast of the United States. And I'm not predicting that this is going to happen. All I'm saying is that we're seeing the earthquake activity at the Canary Islands, whether it's man-made or not. I'm certainly not able to determine that. It's much easier to determine the activity of hurricanes. That hurricanes are manipulated because you can see the activity. You can see the very strange activity that is unlike any natural hurricane. And once again, that was the case with Hurricane Nate, moving at a record 26 miles per hour as it came in. Remember, they evacuated, I forget which areas of New Orleans and the Biloxi, the Mississippi coastline, because this rapidly developing hurricane, was coming in, making landfall. Which, by the way, I read the standard news media talking about this. They're still pumping this idea that these hurricanes are driven by warm water. But what's ironic, I was reading some of the news, the fake news, let's be blunt, about hurricanes, and they said, could a hurricane reach Spain? And I thought, wow, that's strange. Who would even say that? Hurricanes can reach those latitudes. They reach the Nova Scotia. Hurricane Sandy reached up into New York in the cold waters of the North Atlantic. But to get to Spain, that hurricane has to hang together all the way across and north across the Atlantic Ocean. And that's simply... There are traces of hurricane activity, the weather, residual weather, can reach the Canary Islands and Europe and has in the past. But the question of whether a full-blown category named hurricane could get to Spain is really kind of bizarre. A day later, Tropical Storm Ophelia starts heading directly towards Spain. And just as interestingly enough, the region of Catalonia is voting to withdraw from the European Union and from the European banking system. So a very independent region of Spain. So very interesting that these developments occurred. Can you have, they're asking the question, can you have hurricanes arriving in Spain? A day later, there's one actually arriving in Spain. And at the same time, an election, which is not kosher with the, good word, not kosher with the Rothschild banking empire, front agency for the Jesuit banking empire that sits in the Vatican. Okay, so anyway, just a very interesting kind of political situation, but there's no question that the hurricanes that we have seen have been used or are being used for social engineering. The Caribbean Islands, I said this, I believe it was on the Power Hour yesterday morning. I was a guest with Daniel Brigman on the Power Hour. I mentioned that I said it like this. Just watch that the big money people are going to go in and take over Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, and the areas of the Keys, Florida Keys, that were heavily damaged, buy the land up for pennies on the dollar, and then develop high-end resorts there. And same for Puerto Rico. But that's what we saw happen in Southeast Asia after the United States left Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos and Malaysia. All of a sudden, the big money interests come in and start building mega resorts. And people start flying in all over from all over the world. These are competing with the traditional places like the South Seas or the Caribbean Islands or the Mediterranean. These new locations are competing. But the people who got this land after the wars that occurred in Southeast Asia, the people got the land, basically got it for almost nothing. So is that the plan? Is that a plan for the manipulated storms that took out the Caribbean Islands? Is that a plan for, you know, we'll see the building in the next 5 years, if I'm right about this? And I think it's really what was going on. Then they can use the control of hurricanes to steer them away from the populated areas and be hurricane free. Wouldn't that be an interesting twist, so that the money people could come in, take over these islands without ever firing a shot, and then basically build mega resorts for their own comfort and future economic growth. Just a note on the solar energy conditions as we watch Hurricane Nate driving up through the Gulf of Mexico from Central America, where it did quite a bit of damage, driving up to the Gulf Coast area of the United States. But when we look at the solar conditions, the electrical conditions in our solar system that would be required to fuel these storms, that we're not seeing it. We're not seeing the energy systems in the solar wind, in the solar environment, or in Earth's environment to power these storms. And so that leads us, once again, just another factor which you look at when you're starting to determine if these storms are manipulated or not. And the clear answer is that, yes, once again, Hurricane Nate manipulated. Although it did not do a lot of damage. And this is, I still have not figured out completely why Hurricane Nate would be used for social engineering. But then again, that would pretty much put the cap on the entire Gulf Coast of the United States, going from Houston to New Orleans to the west coast of Florida, which was the Hurricane Irma. And, of course, Hurricane Maria did not get close to the mainland United States. It basically ran through the Caribbean islands, mainly damaging Puerto Rico, and then moving off into the Atlantic Ocean, moving north and eastward away from out of harm's way, you might say. But social engineering from man-manipulated storm systems. And as I said, in the future, if you see this, all of a sudden the big money people come in, build the resorts, and start profiting, you might take a guess that this was intentional and with the basic plan of taking this property over for zero. $0 on the dollar. He's talking about pennies on the dollar. This would be less than pennies on the dollar. The reason I was talking about the Canary Islands and tsunamis a number of weeks ago when the Hurricane Irma was going on, Hurricane Maria, etc., is I said if people are intending to do damage on the United States, that would be one of the primary methods of doing it. You can set off terrorist events, you can set off dirty bombs, you can set off all kinds of other events, but there's nothing really more comprehensive than what you might normally call natural disasters. Hurricanes, tsunamis, etc., and affecting very large population centers all in one fell swoop. Even if an army attacked the United States, then you would have, say, fighting in certain areas or would be very restricted areas just because of the logistics of having to take major cities or something like that in a military operation. But a military operation would actually cause far less damage than a hurricane or a tsunami that is water, moving water, tremendously damaging. Another issue regarding Hurricane Nate, because of its very high velocity, 26 miles per hour with 100 mile an hour winds in the arms, you add those together on the right side, on the eastern side of the hurricane, so you're getting winds essentially of 130 miles an hour out of a hurricane that only has 100 mile an hour wind systems. So there again, if you look at where that right side came in, you're talking about Biloxi, Mississippi, the lower eastern wards of New Orleans, which they had to evacuate. So is this social engineering? I guess that's the main question of the hour. A couple quick announcements here regarding the paid cast and the updating of my webpage. I've been doing a number of tasks here trying to get this updated. This show is something I very much keep current, the live show, and so the posting should go up from the last couple weeks. I apologize for that. Just remember that this is still affecting me from my escape, my evacuation from Florida, but it's not affecting my water filter business, which is completely autonomous and runs, in a sense, by itself. I'm still involved in that, but I have it set up so that the ordering and shipping and product movement, etc., is unaffected by, you know, say, if, like in this case, I have been moving from place to place because of the basically evacuating from Florida. and I'm getting back to normal, but it's just when you lose time like that, it's just very difficult to make it up with all the other things that are going on in the background. There are actually some good developments going on in the background regarding my work, things like that. But once again, just letting you know that my webpage hopefully will be updated completely by this week, along with the paid cast, everything up to date, and back to normal in that respect. This is an interesting story here. Now, California, as you know, has been having tremendous wildfires. So we're talking about drought, we're talking about high heat, we're talking about strenuous weather conditions that therefore turn into natural catastrophes. So California, dry, fire, basically on fire. But then if you take the hurricanes that have been coming into the eastern coast and the Gulf Coast of the United States, they are cold and wet, extremely wet. But here's the odd part. The climate change people, the people that are driving this UN agenda of global climate change, which is totally bogus, but the odd part is that when they look at the California dry drought fires, they say, ah, it's due to global warming. When they look at the hurricanes, wet, windy, and with a tremendous amount of rain, oh, global warming. It seems like hot, dry, and wet and cold all are caused by global warming. Just pretty ridiculous. But as I've talked about before, there's no scientific direct link between climate and Earth energy systems like automobiles. Although, you know, I don't believe in driving a lot. That's one issue. But as far as the man-made global climate change of some kind, it's a political football, and that's all it's ever been. But as I say, very interesting that they're trying to claim that the dry drought fire scenario is caused by the global climate change, and that wet, fiercely wet, high wind conditions, are also caused by global warming, they say. So take your pick. Which is it? Seems like everything in the kitchen sink. It must be funding time at the universities, and they're scratching their heads and et cetera, trying to figure out how to keep that money coming in. Okay, I'm going to switch gears a little bit here and talk about a topic that I worked a good deal of my life in, and that is computer technology. The topic at hand is artificial intelligence, or otherwise known as AI. So you'll be hearing a lot about this. What struck my interest is the other day on the Bloomberg business report, I saw an interview with a woman from China, and she's now leading the largest company in China, the largest instant transportation company, equivalent of Uber, in China. And to hear her talk, she's very excited about doing the artificial intelligence and the computer work that goes into delivering people to where they want to go using an Uber type of platform. But that's all good. But the problem is, once planners that believe they are visionary and they have something in mind, and this is what, in a sense, is characteristic of the Chinese, the Japanese, etc., is they get something and they are monovision. They see just that. If this is the case a lot of times when you see businesses, etc., run by the people from China, from Japan. is they are good at, for example, in the auto industry, they did a great job of copying the technology that came out of the United States. They did a great job, but still a lot of creative innovation is coming out of the United States in terms of automobile design. But in terms of the use of AI, artificial intelligence, and in the case of this woman, for traffic control in the megacities of China, cities that are much, much bigger than New York City, you know, cities that are up of 30, 40 million people, if you can even imagine that, cities that we don't even commonly know their names in the West, the issue of congestion and traffic is paramount. I mean, it causes it's the biggest problem in everybody's life. And 10% of the people there have transportation of some kind, personal transportation. So it's a very different scenario, but these cities are just packed with people. But the scary part of all of this is when AI starts taking over human functions. And of course, humans are not very good at organization. I've been in some large cities recently, and one, I was watching the traffic flow, which, you know, you're standing there in traffic, and I'm going, this is really ridiculous. Here you have, out of courtesy, you're letting the pedestrians walk, and all of the traffic has to sit there and wait until these people cross the street. And, you know, this is in major downtown metropolitan areas. There's some cities that have skyways. So the people walk inside the building, and then they cross over the street up above. They don't go to the corner sidewalk and wait for a light and cross the street. So they're literally, there's an entire walkway system that's totally independent of the street traffic. So when you watch traffic flow, the other thing is that cars go for a block, then they stop. There's a light or stop sign. All of this is what slows the traffic down. So we've never developed mechanisms for getting cross traffic across the street. And that's the basic problem, especially in the high traffic areas. If you could open up streets, the idea of a two-way street really doesn't make much sense in the internal city. What you should have are one-way streets that have mechanisms for getting cars across the major arteries without stopping the major artery. Another thing I noticed recently, driving on the highway in the United States, 80 miles an hour is the new speed limit. Everybody is going 80. So 70 is the legal speed limit on freeways. But everybody's going 80, and it really loosens up the traffic. You have basically about 12% more room on the highway. You have 12% less traffic because people are not spending that much time on the highway to get to where they're going. But the use of artificial intelligence coming into society is something you want to keep an eye on. The smart meters that were to measure water capacity or water usage in the houses is one of the first examples of how it can truly be abused. Something as inane as a water meter, something that measures your water flow, reports it to the city so they know how much water you're using, would seem to be something that should not cause a problem. But they slip in the chip that can monitor the house, that can monitor the products that you're using in your house. And how do we know that when AI is applied to the human endeavors, that it's not going beyond what you would expect normal limits? Because, say, an Uber type of system for transportation, it's designed to facilitate moving people from one spot to another. But if it then becomes used for something else, like determining activities of people or the thought patterns are predictive. The woman that I listened to on Bloomberg Report was talking about they are at the point where they can predict in a certain region of the city how many Uber-type transport automobiles they will need in a certain area at a given time. So before a person ever gets to the corner, puts in his request for a car, there's a car on the way because they've anticipated this person's decision, and not only individuals but groups also. So this starts to lead into some very strange areas. They're starting to predict human activity. Where will people be? What should they be doing? And that's gets into the scary part. The scary part is is there a limit? Is there a check and balance on this fervor for economy and efficiency? And remember, that's what happened in the Industrial Revolution. They saw people as automatons, somebody that would do the same method, put the same part on the car over and over again all day, which people still do, but it's much more efficient than a guy putting all the different pieces on an automobile. It's much more efficient, but there's a human side to this also, because you have a guy standing there all day, puts the same hubcap on a car or whatever it is on the assembly line, and after a while it takes away the person's basically a human condition, the human, what makes us human. Take the difference between that person and a person, a pioneer from the 1800s, went out into the woods with an axe in one hand, his wife in the other hand, and the little kid in the other hand, walking into the wilderness and trying to make a living out of it, and having to encounter all kinds of obstacles and overcome them and become adept at living in the woods. A totally different lifestyle than the person who simply puts a nut on a hubcap, you know, all day long, and then tomorrow comes and does the same thing, and then, after 20 years of this, retires. But that's one form of automation. But the other one is where they start to collectively move society. That is the next stage of AI. And that's what this woman was talking about. But what bothers me most is how excited this woman was. She was just so excited about implementing artificial intelligence for the control and the ultimate efficiency. And that is the problem. When you see people like this, they have lost or never had any concept of the human aspect of doing what she's doing. And you're talking about cities with 30 million people and controlling them and controlling their movements with artificial intelligence. I think you can see where this is going. And what if the computer decides someday that it's not efficient to have this number of people, and all of a sudden we have to eliminate people, or we have to move people into certain patterns to make it efficient? So efficiency takes precedence over personal human endeavors or measurements or the ability to live. So they consider that this person is living a better life because they're living in a more efficient society. And this, let me take a segue here. This is the same mentality as Monsanto. The Monsanto mentality is, if we can just take this seed of corn or soybeans and make it so that there's no competitive weeds, there's no competitive plants of any kind, we plant this seed, it's the only thing that grows in this field. It's far more efficient. You get a much bigger production, but doggone, It kills the bees. There's no pollen. There's no need for bees anymore. So let's kill off the bees. The bees are going around trying to get pollen off of these plants, and it's killing them. And they're no longer needed because all of the pollination is done in private farms where the seed is grown. It locks the farmer into having to buy seed every year, and it defeats the natural movement of things. And here's the further problem. Okay, so the Monsanto seed goes out there, and the farmer does not apply the herbicide or the Roundup Ready seed and chemical mix properly, and seeds of other plants start to grow and overcome the resistance to the chemicals that are being put on there. So you have chemical-resistant weeds, super weeds, that now grow that cannot be killed with anything. And whereas the weeds were a problem before, but they weren't controlling 100% of the harvest. Now you have super weeds coming along, and Monsanto, like also with injections, with shots, that the viruses or the bacteria that are being overcome by shots all of a sudden learn how to become resistant. This is a natural progression of things. So the same thing with AI. What if society is put into this box for maximum efficiency, just like the Monsanto seeds, but they become little automatons? They go home, they watch the same TV show, they all laugh at the same time, they go to bed, they get up in the morning, they're told when to be at a certain street corner because of the transportation is going to be there to pick them up. They go to work. They put a nut on a hubcap all day long. They return home. They watch the same television show every night. And it's very efficient. But is that a way to live? It's not something that I would particularly want to do myself. But the reason I'm talking about this is because artificial intelligence is hitting mainstream. Now, there are people that have been talking about these topics for many years, but now it's hitting mainstream. You have Elon Musk investing billions of dollars in AI technology, Google, Facebook, Twitter, all of the major social media players are going into AI to anticipate to, for example, with Google, you do a Google search, you get a response that's different from the next guy. You get a response that's based on your particular past searches and what you clicked on, etc., that'll optimize your search. And I particularly do not want that. I don't want somebody deciding what I should see when I do a search. If I do a search on a topic, I want to see the information that comes up. But then again, the information is being controlled. Back in the early 1990s, there was a massive push. This is when John Casey was the head of the CIA under Vice President George Bush, who really ran the White House from the CIA back then. The White House has been really run by the CIA since Kennedy was shot. But the idea of controlling information that goes to the public. And of course, I work in the area of science, space science. Goodness, the science that is being presented to the public, it goes on for years and years. The idea that the fake idea that hurricanes are controlled and generated by warm water, what a ridiculous concept. Or that comets are dirty snowballs, or that weather is caused by tornadoes are caused by clouds rubbing together, or that lightning is caused by the upwelling of currents in clouds, etc. Just absurdities. But this is being promulgated year after year and decade after decade. So the whole idea of AI and canned knowledge and the planning, basically artificial intelligence, where a computer decides, not a human, because it's much more efficient, we're heading into some very iffy ground here. When I was, back in the like late 70s and the 80s, etc., I was in the computer industry, and everybody talked about something called knowledge systems. Knowledge systems or knowledge base, and those were the precursors to AI, what we're calling AI today. But basically, a knowledge system was, the idea was that you would get all the experts in the world together, and they would put all their knowledge into one knowledge base, and then we would have knowledge captured for all time, and there was no need anymore for classes or research, because we had captured knowledge from the experts into a given database, and then that would be held for all time, kind of like a time capsule, a knowledge time capsule. The only problem is that as things change, and as we find out that the old knowledge was incorrect, how do you get into the computer to change this? You don't. The computer is locked, and that's where we are today. We're locked into a knowledge system like Wikipedia is a good example. It started out as a general encyclopedia where anybody could put in information that they wanted and contribute their knowledge. Well, it soon became a pecking order once again where people did not like what other people were saying, and they moved into positions of power to edit, to socially clean, to cleanse the internet. And so the idea that Wikipedia was an open encyclopedia simply was not true anymore. So what we have now is our kids that, say, do a term paper. What do? They go to Wikipedia. They read what's there, and they assume that that's correct because it's edited by experts. There are people that go in and then edit Wikipedia, and there are other wikis, wiki meaning kind of general knowledge base. There are all kinds of pedias, rational wikis or wikis, that try to slam anything that has any opposing views to standard knowledge. And it uses basically human attacks, personality attacks. It does not allow for any alternative feedback, and therefore it's just a group of people who are trying to control their beliefs or their knowledge systems. But when you actually look at it, they're trying to control fake information that goes to the public, and that is guarded so that the elite are the only ones that have real information. That's where NASA has been for many years, providing the smokescreen of fake science to the public so that the real science can be held and garnered by the world controllers, the bankers, and who control science, etc. The funding process, the top-down funding process that occurs in the United States, they actually spend a tremendous amount of time and effort to make sure that the public does not have correct information. Okay, so anyway, back to the idea of the hurricanes and storms and manipulated natural disasters, not to mention, I made a point on the Power Hour. We were just talking briefly about the alleged shooter in Las Vegas. There is literally not a shred of evidence that this guy ever took a single shot. There is, it's all circumstantial evidence. And there's a lot of evidence to point to the fact that this may not have even been a real event, that people that were supposedly wounded were really not wounded, that they were actors, or that if this was some kind of a partially real event or whatever, that it was staged, there were multiple shooters. But when you look at it, there's not a single shred of evidence that this guy fired a single shot. And he ends up dead, allegedly. We don't even know that. There is so much manipulation and false generation of news these days that you don't know what to believe, because the people, there's no independent investigation. It's all done through the standard media. The standard media picks up the story and runs with it. Lone shooter and using a shoulder bump, what is a shoulder bump type of trigger mechanism for rapid fire. When I heard the tapes of the shooting, it's very clear that there were multiple guns going off at the same time. So it was not just this one guy, if it was him at all. Anyway, it's really difficult to say what the end game or the end story is here. But once again, total disinformation, total blackout of real information. Just a couple announcements. As you know, I've talked about this before. We have in stock the stainless steel containers, the water filter containers. They are shipping the kitchen standard and now the traveler, which was probably 30 to 40% of my orders before were the traveler. And so those are back in stock now. That's the smaller stainless steel water filter that fits under the counter or easily packs into a suitcase for travel. And also, I'm encouraging people to look at the whole house filters, the MR5, which is up to 7 gallons per minute flow rate, filtering flow rate, and then the MR9, which is 12 gallons per minute flow rate. The smaller one, the MR5, is sufficient for literally anybody's house. I have cases where people have larger usage and they're interested in the MR9, the bigger one, or for commercial, farm, ranch, etc. And on the webpage, remember that the filter packs, the replacement filter packs, are on sale if you buy them with the original filter. So all of that on my webpage, jmccsci.com. And remember, the sale is still on, 10% off on major water filter items. And also my paid cast, $3.95 a month for the extra deep dive into scientific topics. And that, as I said, I'm catching up on all of this after the evacuation from Florida. But the water filter business has been running at full bore all along, so everything is in stock, ready to ship. Once again, the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.